Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. So I have two special guests joining me in the studio today. We have Rick Tawley to talk to us about an upcoming art show to benefit the Karuk Ecocultural Fund and the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council. And also joining Rick is Rob DiPerna, the wildlife and forest advocate at EPIC. Welcome to you both.
Hey, nice to be here.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Well, Rick, let's start with you. What is this benefit show that you're hosting and when is it?
We are putting together a benefit art show, as you said, for the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council and the Karuk Tribe's Ecocultural Endowment Fund. That's kind of a mouthful, but it's this Friday night, 6 to 9, at the Upstairs Art Gallery in the Umpqua Bank. That's across from the jogging shop, 1063 G Street. And if you're interested in the genesis of this, I had the gallery reserved for June. I came back from a painting trip in Mexico, and it seemed kind of selfish, this political climate. I went to a Native Plant Society talk. You know, I'm involved with them, and Tanya Chapel and Erica Terrence were talking about Mikwik and their watershed restoration programs and their invasive plant removal programs and their stewardship programs and their training of youth programs. And I go, let's do a benefit for them. So I subsequently went on a hike with them up Woolly Creek, which I had wanted to do for years because I've boated and camped in that area for 30-some-odd years, and we started cooking up what we wanted to do. And then I went to an art opening at Arts Alive, and Heather Ricard, who works with the Karuk Tribe, approached me about including Karuk youth. And having worked at Continuation Highs and Early College of the Redwoods up on the Klamath River for the Yuroks, I said yes, yes, yes. And so that was going to be the group. So it would be art safaris with my friends, Andrew Daniel, John Crater, Paul Ricard, and I. We've gone up there a few times painting along the Klamath and Salmon and with Karuk youth. Well, she organized a paint out, and this paint out turned into Karuk elders. We had Brian Tripp and Clarence Hostler and Julian Lang. We had community members and Karuk youth. So the show will be those two groups, and then additionally, here in the last couple of weeks, Orleans Elementary School got involved. So we have a lot of work from local Orleans kids representing the beauty of the area and the things that they find exciting about living there. So we've got three different groups at this show, 6 to 9 at the Upstairs Art Gallery. There'll be a raffle of a rafting trip. There'll be a quilt with Native American patterning being raffled. And so it'll be a nice event. The wine pour will be by Mikwik. We're just hoping everybody comes out and we have a nice event. There'll be Katie McGurdy will be playing piano, and maybe a few of her students will be doing a recital. And so music, wine, art, and kind of Erica Terrence calls it outreach. We just want to publicize what they're doing. They'll talk a little bit. And a member, Bill Tripp from the Karuk Tribe, will talk a little bit about what they're trying to do. I find myself, you know, being a river person, it's hard to get some of my art buddies to go to the coast. There's kind of a disconnect. And I grew up in rivers over in the, over in the valley in the Sierra foothills. So I have sustained that kind of connection since I've been here for, all going on 50 years now. But anyway, we want to make people aware of what's going on inland and hopefully sell some art and benefit their programs.
Well, that sounds wonderful. So, Rick, tell me a little bit about your art. I'm curious, you have something called art safaris?
Yeah, we just anywhere from a day trip to now we've had 3-night, 4-day trips. We go out and, camp out, or when it was colder in April, we rented cabins. And Sandy Bar Ranch, thank you so much, gave us a discount on cabins, and we stayed there because it was kind of rainy. And then it cleared, and That's my perfect day to go paint right after a rain. The air is really clear. The clouds are breaking up. And we went up and painted on that day in particular at Ike's Falls, which is, it's really a cascade right below Soames Bar where the salmon comes in. And when we're backpacking in the Marbles or staying in Nordheimer Creek with a big family camp out, we always stop there because we don't have any air conditioning in my old truck. And so we stay there and go swimming. It's a great swimming spot. But when we were there in April, it was really raging. So I know John and Andrew and I and Paul, we all got paintings. So you can see the diversity of the kind of work we do. Oils and watercolors. Yeah.
All right. Well, it goes to a good cause. Mikwik and the Karuk Tribe are great friends of EPIC's. So everyone should go out, support the tribe and Mikwik. Well, let's learn a little bit more about what MCQIC is doing. And I think that this is also a very opportune time for a fundraiser because Donald Trump just released his proposed budget, and it really targets the funding sources that MCQIC uses. You know, it goes after restoration funds, and those are largely getting cut out of Trump's budget. So tell us a little bit about what the Mid-Klamath Watersheds Council does.
You know, in the presentation that Erica and Tanya did, they talk about their invasive species removal. They talked about, you know, the watershed restoration, you know, clearing air spawning areas. I was there on the paint out, and Mark from Sandy Bar, quite involved, and Blythe is too. They were building fish traps, so they may be doing some tagging work. You know, stuff like that. And, oh, they have a stewardship program where they there's removal of, you know, clearing around houses, and they have a lot of young people coming back to the area, and they're training them to be involved in their community. That's one of the things they're really proud of, is training people to be involved in the community.
Yeah. Well, thank you for organizing the show. Again, it's 6 to 9, right?
Upstairs Art Gallery, yeah, in the Umpqua Bank. You would think it'd be kind of a strange dichotomy, but AJ there, the bank manager, is really supportive of doing community service and really likes, you know, the gallery is an old conference room.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really the only gallery in Arcata where you don't have retail stuff conflicting with it.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your art.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
All right.
Let's start the second part of our show. So, well, thank you, Rick, for talking to us about the fundraiser. And how about you just join us for this next segment where we just discuss what's going on in the world of environmental issues. All right. Well, so the big news in the environmental world this week was Trump's pulling out of the United States from the Paris Climate Accords. So, Rob, how big of a deal do you think this is?
It's a who didn't see this coming for me. For first of all, it's one of those we knew Trump would eventually go to this point. Secondly, you know, I think the Paris Accord wasn't much of anything anyway. If you really look at it, there was nothing that was mandatory. It was all voluntary. It was same old, where you just take the proverbial pig and put a different dress and maybe some different lipstick on it. And, you know, the world leaders can try to convince people that they're actually doing something other than destroying the planet, which is absolutely not the case. They're just same old, same old.
All right. Well, I'll give it a more vigorous defense than that. And you're right that this was a non-binding agreement. So the way that the Paris Climate Accord worked is that each country would kind of get a carbon budget, and they would figure out their own strategies for achieving that carbon budget. And, you know, there was no teeth. There was no kind of binding mechanism. But there was money that was to be given to countries to develop clean, renewable energy. And I think the biggest thing is that this was the first global climate accord that got everybody on the same page. So we had major upcoming polluters, or not upcoming now, India and China, you know, they agreed to join the accord, and they agreed as part of their commitment under Paris to reduce the number of coal-fired power plants that they were going to produce. So it is somewhat like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, because we need kind of bolder, broader action than Paris gave us. But it meant something. It meant that the world was coming together and finally recognized climate change. And it was something that we could build off of.
And you're right about that, Tom. You are. You're right about that. It's the symbol. And what I was going to finish off saying that I didn't was the symbology is what's important here. The symbolism of us walking away from something like that says, you know, we're not interested and we're in climate change mitigation. We're not interested in the future of the planet and of the people on it. We're interested in our bottom line. And that's really what the signal that clearly sends to everyone, I think.
Absolutely, Rick.
Well, you know, I think it's just more of the paralysis of the federal government. I watched this all through the Obama administration when the Congress became dominated by Republicans. You know, they were just stonewall, 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 and it's all laced with incredible subtle racism, right? I'm a fan of Jerry Brown. California is, what, the fifth largest economy in the world. He's adamant about taking a stand and being progressive and coordinating with other countries. Here we've got one of the hugest economies in the world. And so I think our government, our federal government, is going to be inept, and we're going to be looking to the states.
Well, you're absolutely right on that one, Rick. And that's a big part of what EPIC has been trying to do this year. Even before the Trump election happened, we kind of saw the handwriting on the wall that this was here to really push the envelope in California, in Sacramento, on things like forestry, climate change, endangered species. This is the time to make California great, as it were, in the face of the Trump threat at the in the federal level. So
yeah, let's build that hypothetical wall around California to keep our state green and golden. And you, yeah, I think that's a great point that we need to start taking leadership here on the local level. And one of the things that stands out to me as a great asset that we have here in California are our coastal forests and our forest ecosystems of the northern part of the state. You know, forests are a solution, one of many, to climate change, and will be a necessary strategy to mitigate and minimize the effects of climate change in the future. Here, our coastal redwoods, Steve Silitz at Humboldt State University has found that coastal redwoods can sequester more carbon than any other tree on the planet.
Yeah, that's actually a Van Pelt study. But
oh,
yeah,
that's a Van Pelt.
That's old Bob Van Pelt there. But the point is interesting, Tom, because we know that the only way right now, without introducing lots of technology, we're going to remove greenhouse gases from the atmosphere, like particularly carbon dioxide, is through our forests. And the problem we have is our forests are substantially depleted in terms of their productive ability and their ability to store carbon that they used to have. And as we know, you know, here in the Redwoods, there's some estimates of that were done in Mendocino County in the 90s suggest that the total biomass in the forest is at best at 10% of what it was historically before the Europeans showed up and started logging the old growth redwoods. And when you have a deficit, you have a lot of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Unless you are growing more forests, longer, faster, better, you're eventually going to run into a point of saturation with your greenhouse gas reductions through sequestration, and then we're really lost.
I think that's a great point too, Rob. Our forests are a good potential strategy, but only if we kind of treat them right. Right now, I think the 2014 battle study coming out of, what is it, Berkeley, found that forest carbon is decreasing across the state. And so we have less carbon on the ground now, standing in forests, in shrubland, in grassland, than we did 5 years before, 10 years before. So we're at a negative trajectory. So we have this great potential for carbon sequestration, but it's not being utilized. It's degrading in character.
Right. And it's contrary to a lot of the pub that was spun by the agencies in the timber industry in, you know, around 2010-12 when it was thought that California's forest sector was the only sector of our industries that was not a net emission source. And of course, it's been proven pretty well now by battles that you mentioned, and also the Gonzales study, right? That, you know, that's actually very much not the case, is that our forests are losing more carbon than they're storing right now.
All the more reason for protecting and sustaining and preserving our forests, if they be the lungs of the earth, as we like to call them. I just read something about how at 2045, California is projecting being totally free of fossil fuels. Is that accurate? Solar?
I don't know. It sounds like it's possible.
It's definitely a possibility. I can tell, you know, what we know now is that SB 32 passed the state legislature last year, which extended and really upped the ante on our greenhouse gas reduction targets. You know, the AB 32 from 2006 mandated that we needed to get back to 1990 levels by 2020.
State
levels, yeah. And so it's been, you know, the state feels like we're there. We've gotten to the 2020 target, and the scoping plan update that's before our Air Resources Board right now, they're looking at 2030 targets. They're looking at how to implement SB 32 in the 2030 target, which is to get to 40% below 1990 greenhouse gas level emissions by the year 2030.
You know, when I was down in Mexico, the people approached me, and you know, and they had a lot of things to say. And I, after the election, I said, well, I'm from California. And so that changed the tone a little bit, you know, unfortunately. But one of the things they said, you know, our government controls the oil companies. In your country, the oil companies control the government. And I thought that was so simplistic and so facetious. And then as I started thinking about it, of course.
Yeah.
It's well, that's essentially what it is. And money in politics, and this is what you're going to get. It's always, you know, unfortunately, human nature and the lowest common denominator effect. You got to follow the money to really see what's really going on in the world anywhere, yeah?
Well, who's buying up patents for, you know, using the Teslas and solar stuff? You know, it's oil companies.
All right. So you are listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm joined right now by Rick Tolley and Rob DiPerna. All right. So we're talking about climate change here. One other big thing that's going on locally, you know, talking about local solutions to climate change, is the Redwood Coast Energy Authority's new program. So everyone's going to be auto-enrolled into this new community choice aggregation program where we can choose the sources of our own energy. And so this is exciting. And I know that there's been some squabbling about what type of energy we choose to purchase. Right now, a lot of the RCEA money is going to go towards biomass, and that's been controversial. But we have the ability now that we can have a local source of funds to invest in small-scale hydro, no big dams, wind, tidal. I got a shocked look when I said hydro for those of you in the listening audience. So we can explore all sorts of stuff that is local to our area and sustainable for our area.
You know, it's interesting with RCEA. It is a good thing that we're transitioning to this model. And they are going to eventually have a program where you can opt up for a small additional fee per month and actually be able to have 100% clean renewable energy portfolio in your homes.
$5 per month.
Yes, indeed.
Is estimated cost.
And honestly, the biomass right now that they're purchasing, and I understand there is some controversy. And, you know, the big thing is that we get compliance. Right now, the contract is with Humboldt Redwood Company and the cogeneration plant there in Scotia. And they are out of compliance with because they're trying to, you know, for retrofit and do all these things. But getting them into compliance would be a big step in the right direction with that. And also for folks just to realize that right now, Humboldt Redwood Company and that cogeneration plant, they only burn mill waste. They're not bringing material off the landscape, not even from slash piles, to burn in that cogen. Right now, it's only mill waste. And it's honestly, what I saw a presentation with Richard Engel from RCEA not long ago, where it's only like 16% of the renewable portfolio anyway, biomass. It's a very small amount.
Yeah, we're purchasing energy from wind sources in California and outside. So we're going to have a diverse portfolio of energy solutions here.
I have one comment. I don't want to throw a damp rag on this because I'm totally for it, but it was pointed out to me that the transmission is all owned by PG&E, and that's where the money is made, and there has to be some thinking for alternative transmission sources because it's still going to be a cash cow for them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, a little bit less so now. Yeah. We're carving into that big monopoly.
And I also know that RCEA is looking into eventually how people can plug their energy into the grid from their own renewable sources so that it'll be a two-way, you know, street in terms of interface with the grid. And that'll help, you know, individuals in our community that have renewable facilities can add energy, you know, also, and that'll be good.
So the other big Trump news that has caught the attention and ire of environmentalists is his executive order to revisit, whatever that means, are some national monuments that were made by President Obama. So we have two here in our area, the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, which a little portion of that comes into California. The majority of it is near Hilt, California, if you're familiar. On the other side of Hilt, a little bit further up, is Ashland, Oregon. So it's in the kind of the area where the Cascades meet the Siskiyous. So aptly named Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. And then we also have Barry S.S. Snow Mountain National Monument. Barry S.S. Snow Mountain is down in Mendocino County. So any of our listeners in the Fort Bragg area or Ukiah may be familiar. And that is around also, it makes sense, Snow Mountain and Lake Berryessa. So two aptly named national monuments. So there's been widespread concern over this. Today is the anniversary, I think it's the 111th anniversary of the Antiquities Act, under which these national monuments were primarily created. So, Rick, as an artist, what is important about having kind of wild places like national monuments?
Well, my go-to is John Muir. You know, he always said, walking in a primeval, old, we call it now, old growth forest, that's when you become as as a human, you come to understand your place in the universe and the interconnectedness of all things and how everything is alive as we are and interdependent. And as an artist, beauty is kind of a spiritual value. I mean, that's, for me, sitting and painting the Ike's Cascade or the Duncan Creek waterfall and the Klamath, we're contemplating this beautiful moment, but we're also merging and for a while forgetting ourselves in nature. And when I taught art at Sunnybrae High School years ago, but the Native American kids were in context. They were a small figure with mountains back behind them, and the city kids were very large and the mountains were small. And so that was kind of a metaphor of how the Native American people really live in context with environment. And so that's one of the reasons to really save these places. We need that sense of context and interconnectedness.
And one of the big controversial national monuments under review is the Bear's Ears National Monument. So this has been opposed by the state of Utah government and oil and gas industry because they want to drill, in the middle of a very sacred home spot for a number of Native American tribes in the Southwest. Rob, all right. So what is your thoughts? How can we push back on this national monument? This public land giveaway is really, I think, where it has its roots.
Well, first of all, I'm not really sure that there's any authority given to the president to just authorize reviews of stuff like that, or who's reviewing them and who has the authority to overturn a decision that was made by a prior president. So never minding the technicalities that we actually have a government and rules and order and, you know, sharing powers and checks and balances and all that fun stuff. It seems to me people now more than ever need to realize that, you know, they need the land as much as the land needs them right now. And we have got to figure out a way, you know, that we value the land, the water, the forest, the things that we live with, that we rely on, the life support systems of this planet, as much as we value the imaginary stuff like money and politics and all these other crazy things that we create. You know, this is to me, it's the greatest dichotomy of our existence. You know, we are so self-obsessed with destroying the world that created us for the sake of the world we create. And it's just it's a backwards, broken world, I guess, Tom, you know.
And so one way that folks can get involved, and the comment period for Bear's Ears has now closed, but the comment periods for Cascade Sissou's National Monument and the Barry S. Snow Mountain National Monument are still open, is that you can let, you know, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and President Trump know that you oppose this sort of thing. And so far, the voices have been loud opposing these national monument reversals. Over 750,000 people have already submitted comments in opposition compared to the couple hundred in favor. So we're being loud in the channel that we're given. And I think that we can be loud in other ways, too.
You know, it's all about resource extraction. And I want to talk about the Native spirituality a little bit. I had a chance to read a book, which I recommend to everybody, Walking in Beauty by Harry Roberts. He was a Scottish boy whose father ran a cannery at the mouth of the Klamath. And it's all about not having prejudice, being clear-minded, being really conscientious with everything you do. And so they call it becoming a man. And women became these quote-unquote men also. But then they would, as they became young men and women, they would fast and they would go up these spiritual pathways and intuitions would come to them, spirit would come to them, and they would find their purpose in life. And that's the Native American tradition. And, you know, the Pope just said we don't need religion to be spiritual. And it seems to be my generation, being a baby boomer hipster, this is all that we sought a lot in our youth and our continuing lives, was to have some insight as to one's purpose. And in life, when my wife and I were just talking, you know, I missed some critical messages on organizing the show because I got two different emails. I've got my Facebook Messenger. I've got my Messenger on my cell phone. I've got an office phone, a home phone. So I have too many places to communicate. It's just nuts, you know, where you're overwhelmed with information. So having simplicity, when insights can come to you about your purpose, like the Bears is a sacred site, these places need to be preserved for spiritual reasons. And as I think, as a model now to the white culture how to be.
And I would also say it's not enough just to, you know, fire off an email or make a phone call and think you did something. Democracy, and, you know, if we want to believe, for the sake of argument, we actually do live in a democracy, you know, we are the government, we are the citizens, it's our responsibility to watchdog these guys, and if we don't like them, get them out of there. You know, go out, vote, organize in your communities. You know, this is what democracy is about. It's an action verb, my friends. So,
well, that brings me to what Epic is going to be doing this weekend. And actually, Rick, I now remembered that I can't make the art show because I'm going to be out on the Klamath. And Epic is hosting what we're calling Base Camp, where we are going to ground truth a timber sale coming up on the Klamath National Forest. So this means that me, Rob, the rest of the Epic staff, and I think about 15 Epic members are going to trudge around in the woods looking at trees and figuring out, you know, what trees should be marked for retention, where are riparian areas that aren't on the map, where is the good owl habitat, and trying to reform this timber sale out in the Horse Creek area of the Klamath National Forest. So, you know, that's democracy on the ground. And one thing that I know I'm very passionate about, and I know Rob is passionate about too, is getting folks the skills and tools that they need to affect the changes that they want. So we are working with some folks in the Baywood area on a THP in their neck of the woods, a timber harvest plan. And that's something that we're always willing to do. If you have some issue that you feel passionately about that you want to learn how to affect change, you know, you can come to Epic and we can host a workshop on how to review and comment on a THP, how to review and comment on federal action, how to get yourself involved and how to find attorneys and how to talk the talk and, you know, do the environmental work that Epic has been doing for 40 years.
You know, we are an information center, as they call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I'm a big believer in, you know, community outreach, community organizing, community skill sharing, because if you can give people the proverbial fishing pole and the kayak, you're going to do a lot better than, you know, if you just drive somebody to Murphy's and tell them to get about, you know, trying to get a fillet for the evening, right?
So, yeah.
You know.
People need to be active. And I remember at when Gore lost the election, people were in despair. And I go, well, you voted for, of course, obviously. No, I didn't. I was doing, you know, you have to do something that's positive, even though it's maybe a little stone in the water that ripples out. And we need a lot of little stones going into the wave of Trumpism. But yeah.
Yeah.
Come to Epic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you have two fun things you can do this weekend. One, you can go see some beautiful art and help support our great friends at the Krug Tribe and at the Mid-Klamath Watershed Center. Or you can come out to the Klamath National Forest with Epic and see what's going on the ground. So,
indeed. I want to plug also, in addition to the timber sale monitoring, we're going to do some grazing allotment monitoring. Our good friend Felice Pace is going to be in the house, and we're going to do some grazing monitoring also.
That's true. Yeah. Well, so these are ways that you can get involved, and we hope to see you there this weekend. Well, thank you both, Rob and Rick, for being on the show. This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Rick Tolley and Rob DiPerna about what's going on in our world and what's going on with the Trump administration. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can also subscribe to the Eco News podcast on iTunes, so download it as you're driving out to see the beautiful Klamath River sometime. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred, as always, for engineering. Join us again next week, right here.